We just spent time with Chef Christy Rost talking about enjoying the Thanksgiving holiday. It may seem like an odd switch to talk about men's health and urologic cancers, but in fact, there's a very strong and personal connection. As we did mention, Christy was so grateful for the care that her father received through the UW-Carbone Cancer Center that she recently was in Wisconsin to do the second of an annual event. And so we thought we would also do what we can to raise awareness of these conditions. We're pleased to have Dr. David Girard with us. He is a professor of urology and works with the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center. Dr. Girard, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, November has become not just a month for Thanksgiving, but a month to focus on men's health, in particular cancers that affect the male population. How did that movement start?
Well, there's traditionally been an underrepresentation when it comes to a focus on men's health. It tends to be often ignored. Most men feel fine, and they don't routinely see their physicians. So it's this whole movement really started with raising awareness, and to a certain extent with diseases such as prostate cancer. The breast cancer community has large advocacy community, but the prostate cancer is less so. So we actually, in this term has been coined Movember, and this is a unique month because it's the one month in the year we can grow facial hair and not get in trouble.
Because really, especially in Wisconsin, it just makes sense.
It does. It does. And it also gives you a reason for people to ask you why you're growing a mustache, and you have a good reason. You can point out that this is Men's Health and Prostate Cancer Awareness Month.
Well, and I think, you know, raising awareness always sounds like a good idea, but, you know, sometimes if it's not well-focused, it doesn't have quite the impact that it might. As a doctor working on urologic cancers, what are your hopes for things like Movember and increased awareness around men's health?
Well, you know, there are basics, you know, keeping an eye on your blood pressure, watching out for blood sugar, cholesterol, you know, these kinds of preventative health things that men often ignore. But there are larger issues as well, and I'm actually a specialist in urologic cancers, so we deal with cancers of the kidney, bladder, prostate, and testicular cancer as well, and these are all diseases, they affect mostly men, but women as well, mm-hmm. To a certain extent.
Certainly bladder and kidney.
Correct.
Could affect women as well. Yeah. Are men, even though, you know, those could be either gender, are men more prone to get kidney or bladder cancer than women?
Well, for example, in bladder cancer, they are, but the main reason is bladder cancer is closely linked to smoking. And more men smoke than women, and thus they're at increased risk of developing the disease.
So you mentioned bladder, kidney, prostate, testicular cancers. Of those urologic cancers, which are the most common?
So the most common cancer is actually prostate. That affects about 200,000 men are diagnosed annually with it, and there are about 30,000 men that die from the disease. And there's been a lot of controversy recently regarding detection of prostate cancer using a blood test called PSA, or prostate-specific antigen.
And what's the controversy been?
It basically stems with the test is fairly good at screening populations, but it is not perfect. And we look to treat cancers that are aggressive, but unfortunately, PSA also detects cancers that are not necessarily aggressive or life-threatening. And so there can be some issues surrounding this. And one response to this that the urologic community has taken is that we're able to often watch many of these low-grade focal prostate cancers. They don't necessarily need to be treated. But
So a watch and wait kind of approach.
Exactly. We term it active surveillance is what it entails.
And so who is most likely to develop prostate cancer? This is the most common urologic cancer, and is it the second most common cancer for men overall?
Well, of solid tumors, actually, it's the most common.
Ah, okay.
Yep. And So about one in six men end up getting the cancer. Now it's a bit unique because many prostate cancers are slow growing and as I said don't need to be treated. So it's not a cancer that we focus on for older men. For example, once you're over 70, most physicians would agree that you're probably out of the woods when it comes to being affected with prostate cancer as far as being diagnosed with it. But we really try and focus most of our screening efforts on men between 50 and 70. Mm. Now, you're talking about risk factors. A first-degree relative, like a father or a brother, is a risk factor that can affect this. African-American ethnicity can also affect your risk of developing the disease.
And why is that?
So there's some biology related to it, but in part genetics play a role with prostate cancer. And it's a very complex genetic background. We're still learning more about this. There's no perfect test that we can look at cancer susceptibility yet. But also there are other factors. Diet plays a major role. And you were talking about cooking a little earlier.
Yes.
On, and I heard a lot about things that may not necessarily be prostate healthy, but...
Did you hear the grape salad recipe?
Okay, I missed that one.
Okay, well, it has Cool Whip. I think that kind of sums it up, so...
Okay.
Well, we have a lot to talk about with you, Dr. Girard, but I want to invite our listeners to call in and join the conversation. What questions might you have for Dr. Girard about men's health and specifically prostate and other urologic cancers? Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with or treated for prostate cancer? Dr. Girard is happy to answer your questions, and I'm sure would be interested in hearing your experiences as well. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@WPR.org or post a question or comment on our Facebook page. And we did have a question, Dr. Girard. What symptoms should someone look at if they're in a pre-screening age group, for instance, in their 40s?
So unfortunately, there are until the very advanced stages, there are not really any specific symptoms. I would point out that it's a common belief that men will develop urinary symptoms, slowing stream, urgency, frequency, getting up at night. But those are not associated with prostate cancer. Those are more associated with just benign enlargement of the prostate that also occurs with aging.
Mm-hmm.
So really, detection is the critical thing. And one else, as an aside, I'll say, at the Cancer Center here in the Department of Urology, we really focus on trying to come up with better strategies for detecting this cancer. The PSA only gets us so far, and we really need to come up with new strategies. And we're looking at urine-based testing for some new markers, as well as better defining the patients that might be at risk.
Mm-hmm. And so the PSA test, which again is a blood test, correct?
Correct, yes.
So that is not always, the best. But currently, you said you're looking at some other options, but is that right now really the only way that it's diagnosed?
That is the standard of care.
Okay.
Yes.
And how often should a man who's in that kind of target group of, I think you said, 50 to 70?
Correct.
Get a PSA test done?
So it's interesting because... I think the most important thing is to sit down and talk with your physician about the pros and cons of PSA testing. Because there are some men that will benefit from it, but some men will not. And what I mean by that is you may be somebody who is found to have an elevated PSA who undergoes a biopsy and is not found to have cancer, and thus you would not necessarily have been benefited from being by having that testing. So obviously the test is not 100% sensitive or specific, but there are things. So it's important to sit down and talk with your physician about the pros and cons of testing for prostate cancer. Now, if you elect to get a PSA test, if you have a PSA test that is very low, often it would not need to be repeated, once every 5 years. Now, if it is found to be intermediate or higher ranges, above one or even higher than that, then often it would be every 1 to 2 years, depending on the situation.
And when you say higher than one, so it's measuring the level of what exactly?
So PSA is actually a protein that is produced in the prostate, and it leaks out into the bloodstream. And cancer can produce this protein at higher levels. Prostate mm-hmm. cancer can. But unfortunately, other things, such as if you have a focal area of inflammation or infection in the prostate, that can also cause the PSA to be released.
We are talking with Dr. David Girard. He is a professor of urology and works with the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center. We're covering men's health in general and also specifically urologic cancers. That includes bladder, kidney, prostate, and testicular cancer. There's a lot more to talk with Dr. Girard about, and I hope you'll stay tuned. We're going to take a quick look at the news from NPR and WPR, but you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. According to the American Cancer Society, an average of 200,000 new cases of prostate cancer are diagnosed every year. It's a very common cause of cancer for men, and it's also a leading cause of cancer death for men. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. I'm glad you're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio today for an important and potentially life-saving conversation. Dr. David Girard joins us today. He's a professor of urology and works with the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center. And Dr. Girard, again, thanks for spending time with us today.
Certainly.
And I do definitely want to get back to prostate cancer, and we have several callers online who want to talk about that. But first, let's talk with Mary in West Bend. She has a slightly different question. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My husband has a lump that shows up when he exerts, does exercise, things like that. He had his prostate removed about 10 years ago. And we are trying to determine whether or not this is a hernia or could possibly be cancer. And the reason I say that is because my sister, about 3 years ago, was diagnosed with a hernia and had surgery for it. But then it turned out that it was cancer, and it happened to be a fatal cancer. Mm. So how does one go about making that determination as to whether it is an actual hernia or could possibly be a cancer?
Sure. So thank you, Mary. Dr. Girard?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would definitely have him see his physician. But one thing I would say is that, you know, given the fact that it gets worse with exertion, it sounds, at least over the phone here, more like a hernia than anything more serious than that. Obviously, the PSA, there are some, it's not a perfect test prior to cancer treatment, prostate cancer treatment, but afterwards, it's actually a very sensitive marker of recurrence. And if you're worried about prostate cancer recurrence, you can check a PSA, and if it's undetectable, then there's really no concern for that. But certainly,
would there
it
be
sounds...
a PSA?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mary.
Would there be a PSA if he's had his prostate removed?
Yeah, if the prostate and the cancer has been removed completely, the PSA becomes undetectable, and it's a very sensitive marker for tracking the disease afterwards and making sure that there's no recurrence.
All right, so sounds like an appointment with the general practitioner is the first stop, Dr. Girard?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for that call, Mary, and best of luck to you and your husband. Actually, Bob in Madison, I think, has a good follow-up to something you just said, Dr. Girard. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I also have had a radical prostatectomy some years ago, and just recently was advised by a doctor that the PSA level is, again, rising. However, it's still less than one. And I'm wondering, at what point should I expect that they will begin treatment or would it consider treatment?
And first, Dr. Girard, if you can define what a radical prostatectomy is.
Yes. So one way of treating prostate cancer is removing the cancerous gland. And this can be done a couple of different ways. One is through a small incision underneath the belly button, and the other is through using a laparoscopic robotic approach. So after the prostate's removed, the PSA should go to zero and remain undetectable. And in a setting where the PSA is rising, that may indicate some residual cancer. And so it certainly would be important to have that checked out.
So even though the prostate has been removed?
Yes. So the PSA is a protein that's produced by the prostate tissue as well as the cancer. So the prostate's been removed, and if the cancer's been removed completely, it should remain undetectable.
All right. Bob, did you have go ahead.
Is there a level of PSA that would warrant treatment, or is this something you would watch until it reaches a certain level?
So generally, we would want to approach this, and I have colleagues in the cancer center here who are in the radiation therapy department. That might be one option, but we would want to approach this sooner rather than later. Often, it's earlier is better.
So, Dr. Girard, would you recommend Bob contacting his urologist? Or
yeah, I would suggest starting there, and they could talk with you about various approaches in this situation. There are obviously questions about whether it's in the area of the prostate or potentially somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's a fairly delayed rise, it may very well be just in the local area where the prostate was.
All right. Good luck with that, Bob. We'll be thinking of you. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We're talking with Dr. David Girard, a professor of urology who also works with the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. And we do have several other callers, Dr. Girard, but I wanted to ask you about something. A couple of years ago, we had a guest on the program who talked about the possibility of a vaccine against prostate cancer being developed. Is there any update on that?
Yeah, so I have a number of roles. One is obviously I'm a surgeon, a urologist, but I also do prostate cancer research. And here in the Department of Urology in the Comprehensive Cancer Center, we actually have about a football field-sized area that is devoted to prostate cancer research.
Wow.
And there are a lot of very innovative approaches we're taking towards this. One of them is an immune-based approach. And this is essentially using a vaccine to attack the cancer cells. That particular trial, and I can guess who that investigator you had talked to, is actually moving on into, it's in human trials right now, and it's very encouraging.
I believe it was Dr. McNeil.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, Doug McNeil, whose office is just a couple of down from here. This is just one of these innovative approaches that we focus on here. We're looking at new ways of stopping cancer cell growth as well by combining different types of treatments. And as I mentioned, there are some newer tests for detecting this that hopefully will be better than the PSA, and there won't be so much concern about that approach.
All right. Well, please keep us posted on that. It sounds like really exciting research. Let's go back to the phones, and John in Oshkosh is up. Hi, John.
Hi, Judith. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Good afternoon.
Question for you. I'll take a couple of questions, and I'll take it off the radio, the answer off the radio. I'm a 54-year-old male. When I turned 50, a year after my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer at like 72, I had PSA test and the physical exam, and he had the robotic surgery that you talked about, the radical prostatectomy, robotic laparoscopic surgery. And is a two-part question here. I'm going in Monday for physical. Labs should be done by tomorrow. My father, the PSA levels are starting to rise again. Mm-hmm. It seems like he has a lot of, and all of his friends that have had prostate cancer and surgery are dealing with having to wear diapers all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious about, why they're wearing diapers and if there's any progress on prostate cancer patients not having to have these urinary problems. Mm-hmm. And also the physical aspect of a prostate exam. Back when I was 50, boom, boom, it was done by a nurse practitioner. Didn't even know she was back there. Mm-hmm. I imagine you have to spend a little time feeling around. What exactly are you feeling for?
Those are great questions, John.
Yeah. Yeah, so prostate cancer screening, as you mentioned, we've been talking about, one aspect of it is the PSA blood test, but the other is the, what's called the digital rectal exam. And typically a normal part of an exam by your primary care physician is the rectal exam. You're essentially feeling the prostate, and the normal prostate feels almost like the inside of your hand. It's softer. But a prostate nodule is what the physician's feeling like, which feels like your knuckle. So these are nodules that that are being felt for. The physician can also feel other things. For example, if they're colon tumors that are very low down, those can sometimes be detected through the digital rectal exam. So it's a reasonable thing to have done when you have a physical exam. Although it is uncomfortable, but it's we all have our cross to bear from both sides.
And let's go back to the phone, and Sarah in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, nice to meet you guys.
Yeah,
nice
you
to
too.
Me.
Sure. What's your question, Sarah?
My question is, with a stage 4 cancer patient with prostate cancer, you had mentioned earlier diet being important. And I'm wondering what an ideal diet for a stage 4 patient
and
undergoing chemo
would be. All right. And thank you for that, Sarah. And Dr. Gerard, let's also talk about what a diet that might help prevent prostate cancer might look like as well.
Yes, there's a lot of data to suggest that diet plays an important role in cancer. And that's certainly something that here at the Cancer Center Department of Urology, we focus on, and we actually have a full-time nutritionist who does a lot of research, but is also somebody who helps counsel patients. And actually, on our website, actually the University of Wisconsin Department of Urology, we have some dietary recommendations for patients that that have prostate cancer. But you know, with patients undergoing chemotherapy, obviously those are not necessarily quite as applicable. I mean, you want high energy foods for those individuals to keep their stamina up. But from the prevention standpoint, there have been a lot of interesting observations. Low fat diet is important in preventing prostate cancer. There have been some various supplements and other things that can contribute to helping prevent prostate cancer. For example, cooked tomatoes clearly play a role.
Is that the lycopene in them?
Yes. Well, again, I think often here in the United States, we tend to try and take an observation like cooked tomatoes and find the one thing that prevents it. But what I would say is it's probably more the cooked tomatoes than it is just the lycopene.
Yep.
And other observations are pomegranate. And we have a trial going on using that as a dietary supplement right now, but there's certainly a lot of data to support its use as well. So, but really some of the low-fat diet, the heart-healthy diet actually helps prevent prostate cancer.
All right. Thanks for that call, Sarah. And actually, I realized that we did not cover one of the aspects of the caller before, Sarah, asking about incontinence with prostate cancer and if there's anything that can be done to help that.
Yeah. So one focus we really work on is minimizing the side effects with any sort of treatment, be it radiation therapy or surgery. And to a large extent, we've been able to minimize those risks. Patients that that do have this unfortunate side effect, there are some options that they have, and we do have some specialists who deal with these areas that can help with urinary leakage afterwards. But for the most part, it's a fairly infrequent or rare side effect in the majority of patients.
All right. Just wanted to make sure that we covered that as well. Let's go next to Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Very good discussion. Thank you very much.
Good. I'm glad.
It's always interesting to me when I hear the prostate and some of these others because I too had the diagnosis 10 years ago, and I had the surgery at age 54. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there wasn't a lot of the laparoscopy going on. At least my doctor didn't do it, but she did a really good job doing it the normal, you know, they just opened me up and mm-hmm. took out what they needed to take out. Pathology was good post-surgery, and that everything retained or stayed in the gland. And then I haven't had to have any follow-up treatment. My question was the PSA test. I had a PSA test, I think, almost quarterly or at least twice a year the first 4 or 5 years. And after that, I think I've only had one done after 5 years. I think I had one done in 2011. It was still at zero. Mm-hmm. Question is, at 63, now 64, how often I should have this done for the rest of my life?
All right. And congratulations, Jeff, on a good recovery.
Yes.
Dr. Girard?
Yes, and it sounds like that you're doing well, and that's great. The recurrence after 10 years is extremely small, and so at this point, it's fine not to get a follow-up PSA after being treated for prostate cancer.
All right.
Appreciate that, and good luck with your practice. And I think early detection is key, and I have to give credit to my family physician back in the day. She really helped me, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. That was a wonderful thing to share. Ben in Madison had a question. When a PSA test is done, what are the chances of a false positive or a false negative?
So it depends in part on the level of the PSA. And there actually are more specialized PSA variants that can help improve the test. So there's something called a free PSA. And this basically looks at how the PSA protein floats around in the bloodstream, whether it's free or bound to other proteins. And these can actually increase the specificity and sensitivity of the test. So it depends not only on the level of the PSA, but on this free-to-total PSA, which is something that is not widely used. And when we got in this argument about the benefits and risks of PSA screening, that was not something that was brought up.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for that question, Ben. And I wanted to go back to treatment options because we have talked about that one option is complete removal of the prostate. Are there other treatment options depending? And what does that depend on? How is that decision made?
Yes, there are certain, let's just run through the other. As I mentioned, there are a number of men that may potentially be candidates for just watching these cancers. And little low-grade focal cancers, we can many times just monitor these, and they typically will have a very slow, indolent course over a number of years. Another option is radiation therapy, and they've really made a number of advancements with what we call conformal radiation therapy, or it's essentially shooting the radiation beam in a 360-degree arc around the patient, so you really limit the exposure of the normal tissues, and you can really focus the beam on the prostate itself.
Now, in the past, and perhaps now, but in the past, I think that there was a process where basically like it was seeding the prostate with radioactive substances.
Yes.
Is that still used?
Yes, it's still an option in selected patients. It's called brachytherapy is the term, but it's taking small radioactive seeds and placing these in the prostate under an anesthetic. They deliver radiation over a period of months and then become inert after that point.
So radiation, wait and see, or complete removal, those are the main treatment options?
Yes, yes.
We have one more caller, so let's make sure we get to him. Joe in Linden is up. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
My question is, my PSA recently was 9.6, and my biopsy was negative. The doctor mentioned that there were other conditions that might present with a high PSA, and I'm wondering what those might be and what I might be looking out for.
All right. Thanks for that call, Joe. And Dr. Girard?
So the enlargement of the prostate with aging can cause the PSA to rise slowly over time. Other potential reasons are inflammation. There can be focal areas of inflammation or infection that may have contributed to it. And this might be a reasonable opportunity to get a, as I mentioned, that free to total PSA in follow-up, and that can potentially help direct any further management. And I would say that, it really is, this is an area that needs additional markers, additional research, and that's certainly something that we and many others are working on to try and help individuals that have this disease but also are at risk for it.
And so for Joe's maybe next step, what would you recommend?
Yeah, at this point, with a negative biopsy, it certainly puts you in a much better situation, and it's reasonable to check another PSA in a year, potentially even getting that free to total PSA.
All right. Good luck with that, Joe. And Dr. Gerard, we have just a minute or two left, but we did touch a little bit on diet in the role of prevention. Are there any other ways that we can help to prevent prostate cancer?
So, unfortunately, prostate cancer is one of those diseases of aging, and if you live long enough, you're going to end up getting it. Now, the majority of these aging prostate cancers are these little specks of cancer mm-hmm. that typically don't create a problem. We're more focused on, obviously the more aggressive cancers. So if we can come up with a way to stop aging, I guess then we can cure prostate cancer.
And I would say, I'm guessing that the rates have risen also because people are just living longer.
That's a great point. 20, 30, 40 years ago, many men used to, and women used to die of cardiac disease or heart disease. And now that we're doing such a better job of having patients live longer due to that, their risks are increasing from these age-related cancers.
And what's the one message that you'd really like people to take away from this conversation?
So I think, again, this is Movember, which is Men's Health Month. If you haven't seen a doctor in a while, do see your doctor. Have your blood pressure checked and have an exam. And be aware of these issues of prostate cancer, hematuria, because really prevention and early detection are the best approaches when it comes to treatment of cancer.
Well, Dr. David Gerard, we did not even get to touch on some of the other urologic cancers. Will you come back and talk with us again?
Certainly be glad to.
It's been a great conversation, and I hope that it's really given people some important information. So thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Dr. David Gerard is a professor of urology and works with the University of Wisconsin's Carbone Cancer Center. He joined us in part because Chef Christy Rost, who was on for the first half of the program, was just here doing a benefit for them. So great to get information out about both. Tomorrow is Garden Talk, and we will be learning how to make sure that we have healthy soil for our gardening. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening.